According to surveys by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, about a third of Americans are bird watchers, and I'm sure that number is growing. Larry Mueller here, and today we're taking a look at, we'll talk with one of those guys who was a birder. Matt Reed's back with us, the executive director of the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance, and we're going to hear about some of the key issues Matt's group is working on, and, you know, it's all about improving the lives of birds in our state. Maybe you're involved in a birding group. How's it changed how you look at bird watching? Give us a call. The number, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Matt Reitz, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Pleasure being here. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance. It's who's a part of the group, and what kind of work do you do?
We are a nonprofit organization that is focused on bird conservation of birds and their habitats, and really getting folks to enjoy birds and all the benefits that they bring. We started as a little bird club in 1935. It became the Madison Bird Club. It turned into Madison Audubon. And so we've had a rich, long history. We're also an accredited land trust. So we own and manage a whole bunch of land, about 3,000 acres of land at 4 wildlife sanctuaries in the area throughout southern Wisconsin. And those are all managed for native habitats and public enjoyment. So great places to go and visit enjoy birds and wildlife.
That whole land conservation thing, this is interesting. It really, I think, fits in, and maybe you can talk about how, in your mind, it fits in with the whole goals.
Yeah, our board made a very bold decision in the late 1960s. There was a little prairie pothole outside of Madison that was a favorite spot of birders. It's called Goose Pond. And at the time, it was coming up for sale, and the board had about $1,200 in the treasury, and decided to buy it. And so that really kind of set a course for our organization. We're a unique bird conservation organization because we do all the things that, you know, Audubon chapters do and other bird conservation organizations do, field trips and citizen outreach and science. But we also invested a lot in this idea of land protection. And so we're a nationally accredited land trust, and we uphold these really high standards for conserving land that's done in perpetuity. And so we've got about 3,000 acres of land, which is unique for an organization like ours. It's growing all the time, and we also actively manage it year-round for the best possible habitats.
Yeah, and when you talk about actively management, that was running through my head. You know, you've got 3,000 acres. That's a lot of acreage, and it's not all in one spot, obviously. It's spread around. How do you manage?
That's a great question. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of time and effort. We have incredible volunteer land managers, and we also employ staff, full-time staff, limited-term ones as well, seasonal employees. We have a big crew of young people that come and help us every summer. And we have a really big list of volunteers that dedicate their time toward doing this, whether it's seed collecting or helping us with prescribed burns or helping with citizen community science programs. We are very fortunate to have such a wonderful group of people that help us with this. And we also have to raise funds to do that, too. So it's expensive to manage land, but it's the investment we're putting into the land has a huge return.
How many people do you have as part of the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance?
Oh, I should know this like right off the top of my head. I think we're at 14 staff full-time, salaried staff. And then we have, during the course of the year, we have maybe 8 to 10 interns or seasonal staff that help us with various things.
Wow. Matt Reitz, our guest today, executive director of the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance. And you can join in with your own questions. Maybe it's about birds. Maybe it's about the land. Give us a call. The number 800-642-1234 or email us to talk@wpr.org. Great time now to start birding. We're in the middle of the spring migration. Or I don't know if we're in the middle. Well, probably. I understand that you have three tips
I do.
For getting the most out of a spring birding season and session.
Yeah. Okay. First of all,
all right.
This is a super exciting time.
Yeah, it is.
Spring migration is so fun. It's fabulous. And birding is, a lot of times people kind of envision a birder as somebody with a khaki vest on and big binoculars and a Panama hat or something. But it really is for everybody. Everybody can enjoy birding. Birds are free for everybody to enjoy. And so there's no experience needed. And we host a lot of different kinds of field trips for folks that have different abilities. So some folks who are, maybe they are an advanced birder and they want to come along on a warbler walk because warblers are a little tougher. But you can come on any of these field trips, and they're for different levels. So we encourage everybody to check out our website. They're free. You don't have to be a member. They're really just designed for people to enjoy birds in different ways. There are also other organizations that do this too, like BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin, Feminist Birding Club, Natural Resources Foundation obviously has wonderful trips. So there's lots of ways for we don't have the market cornered on bird field trips. But the other thing I want to mention here is that, you know, you use the word bird watching, and birds are wonderful because they're beautiful and they're fabulous. Their behaviors are amazing, so you definitely see what they're doing. But listening for birds is really, really fun. I mean, a sign of spring is to hear the robins chirrup, chirrup, chirrup song, and cardinals and all sorts of great things. So we also host a class called Birding by Ear, which is in partnership with the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired. So if you have different vision abilities, you're able to join that class and learn how to bird by ear. There are really, really great apps for this too. Merlin is a wonderful app for identifying the songs that are around you. You'd be surprised how many birds there are singing at a given time, so especially in the spring. And then the last thing is that there's something called slow birding. And that's one of my favorite ways to bird, is just to kind of sit and wait for the birds to come to you. And you just kind of just check out what's going on. And you'll be surprised, too, about how many birds will just be around and they'll come to you. So you don't have to necessarily go and hike 12 miles. You can sit in your backyard and slow bird and watch behaviors and see all sorts of different kinds of species.
I like those tips. Well, but why should they consider joining a group like the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance? You're kind of getting at that already, but be more specifically.
Well, birds matter. Birds are really, really important. They do so many things for us that they basically do for free. So they're providing all sorts of what we call ecosystem services. They do. They're pollinators. They spread seed. They control pests. And so they're doing all of these important cycle nutrients. I mean, think about what a turkey vulture is eating. That's the stuff that nobody else can eat. A turkey vulture can eat rotting flesh, which is an important service. And so they're cycling those nutrients. So they're doing all of these things for us for free. You could never replace the value of the services that they provide for us. They're vital, and they're doing it for free. And the other part of it is that birds are, they make life better. And so they're both big industry. They're somewhere around $279 billion is brought into the economy in the U.S. economy every year through bird watching activities. And so when we talk about birds, they're really important to us. Their fate is really tied to ours. So we have to be actively conserving them all the time. And there's lots of threats to birds: habitat loss, climate change. We've lost 3 billion birds over the last 50 years. We're big reductions in grassland birds. 43% of grassland birds are big decline there. So there are lots of threats to birds, and we really, really need to do our best to protect them.
And I think when I'm thinking about a group like the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance, well, somebody might say, well, they all know more than I'm going to feel like an idiot when I go to one of those meetings because I don't know that much. I know what a robin sounds like and a blue jay maybe and a cardinal, but that's it.
Everybody is welcome. You don't have to know anything about birds to enjoy them and be a part of our work. I mean, I think we have a board of 11 volunteer board members, I don't think most of them are birders. So, and I think most of the folks that come to our organization are not birders. They want to just enjoy being outside. They want to get involved in volunteering. Birding is for everyone, and all levels are welcome.
Jeff emailed us, other than the birding outings, could you talk about other outstanding activities that are done? Monarch tagging, bird and brew crawl, etc. Jeff says as many had many fantastic memories thanks to you and your crew.
Well, that's lovely to hear. I love that. We try to offer a lot of different ways for folks to be involved, and that could be, you know, adult education classes. We do art classes on the prairie. We have a very vibrant education program that is both for adults but also is for school kids. We have these wonderful educators who are so wonderful with kids, and they work with middle school, elementary and middle school age kids. And we have a program where we go and visit the schools and community centers. And we do that repeatedly, bringing really, really broad and very effective curricula that gets kids excited about being outside and or teaches them how to be scientists and brings some of those joys to young people. You know, I'm about to say it. Kids these days, they just don't go outside like they used to. I used to get kicked out of the house by my mom, and then I would come back, you know, scrape knees and
hours later.
And so there are data that show that kids just don't get outside the way that they used to, and they're not receiving the benefits. So one of our goals is to get kids outside and excited and receive the benefits of nature and also become the future stewards of natural resources. So lots of ways that we approach bird conservation and getting folks excited. You know, we do special events. You got to check out our website. There's tons of ways for people to get involved. And we also have a very, very comprehensive community outreach and citizen science program where we're monitoring bald eagle nests. Or we have the second largest American kestrel nest box program in the country. We monitor bird collisions on a campus and in other buildings around the city and the area. So there's lots of different kinds of programs.
And we're going to take some calls and emails as well as we move along here with Matt Reitz, Executive Director of the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance. Give a call at 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking with Matt Reitz, Executive Director of the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance. Great to have him with us. Tomorrow on the show, I have a couple of leaders from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection to look at some of the latest scams, unfortunately. And then we'll get a reporter from the New York Times Wirecutter, kind of a cool group. They'll tell us about the best products their team tested this past year. Right now, questions about birds or maybe an experience to share? I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. Lisa in Sheboygan emailed us. She had the most wonderful experience on Sunday. Every time she walks in the garden in Sheboygan, she'd hear this twee, twee, twee. And through Merlin, she learned that it's a tufted titmouse, a cute gray bird with big black eyes. So she invited her friend Mary, a bird watcher, to join her. And, of course, they walked for a half hour and didn't hear a thing. So she started calling, and then Merlin picked it up from far away. She called more. It got closer and closer. They tried to follow it. Then there were two high up in a dead birch tree branch. It was a lifer, according to her friend.
That's fantastic. That's a great example of everybody has a sort of a bird story, and they're just so accessible. Birds are just a wonderful way to get involved in natural resources conservation. We feel like we have our organization has a great product. They're these amazing birds. So they're just a great entry for folks to enjoy the natural world. Tufted titmice are fantastic birds. They're tough little ones, and they have a great, beautiful little call. They're super interesting because, titmice and chickadees, their hippocampus, their brain gets bigger every year. because they're caching seeds. So every winter, their hippocampus grows by about 30%. So they can store seeds and then figure out where they are. And then the brain shrinks in the non-breeding season back to normal size. Super interesting.
Listener in Sturgeon Bay sent us an email. There were massive fires out in the Plain States. I'm wondering if that'll push migration routes in a different direction.
Yeah, I would assume that they'll affect the birds in some way. They're probably, you know, obviously the birds are going to avoid those areas. There's actually some evidence, too, that that smoke and wildfires do have a negative impact on bird populations. There's a researcher named Olivia Sanderfoot who is going to give a presentation about that, actually, for our organization coming up. I don't know. It's on our website. But, yeah, those kinds of large disturbance events can impact birds.
What are your, like, you mentioned in passing bird strikes and windows. I mean, what are you guys doing in that area?
So birds didn't evolve with clear-paned windows. It's a real problem for them. They just can't see them. So, and with the advent of more and more windows in buildings, there's been a big increase in the number of birds that are killed every year. Up to 2 billion birds are killed every year in the U.S. by colliding with windows. So we've been monitoring buildings on campus and in other buildings around the area to determine which are the kind of problem areas. And then we can do mitigation strategies on those windows. So, for example, I had a back screen door that was claiming a robin every year. And I'm the director of a bird conservation organization. That could not happen. So I put there's a lot of solutions that you can have for your windows that I implemented one, which is called a feather. What is it called? Oh, it's dots. It's 2x2 dots. And when I put those on myself, I've never had another collision. So we use those kinds of strategies in some buildings to mitigate what happens there. Fortunately, also, Madison has the first ever bird glass ordinance that was passed a couple years ago. And so for large buildings, new buildings that have expansive windows, they're required to put in the solution prior to construction. So we've learned a lot from our program, and we encourage folks to volunteer with us, because we're just kicking it off. Now it's spring migration starting, but we're trying to get these programs started in other cities as well, so that we can really make a positive, no pun intended, impact for birds in this regard.
I was flashing back just yesterday. I was around the square, the Capitol Square, and there's one building that is entirely windows.
Mm-hmm. I knew it. Yep. Yeah. So,
I mean, the whole building is glass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's a really famous example of something called the Jarvis Center in New York City that was entirely glass. And that building was claiming birds like crazy. And to their the New York City Bird Alliance was able to study that and then implement solutions. And now that it's covered with bird glass. So that's not killing birds like it used to be. So it's great. So
I don't know about the one on the square, whether or not, but it's sort of a side issue. Well, it's an important issue.
Yeah, and we're trying to get the word out on this that, there are ways to implement strategies that help birds. I mean, nobody wants to have birds running into their windows.
No,
it's not,
no.
That painful thud of a bird hitting a window is just an awful sound. And folks have reported, that these beautiful birds just lying on the sidewalk in various places. It's really tragic.
And another recommendation I think you had was turning off lights. And why might artificial lights be harmful?
Artificial lights are particularly harmful at night because birds travel at night, especially during spring migration. They use many use the stars to navigate. And so light at night can really confuse birds. And so they'll fly toward light and they'll collide with the windows or collide with buildings. So what we're doing is we have a partnership called Lights Out Wisconsin. And you can go to Lights Out, just type in Lights Out Wisconsin. We have a website there and you can learn basic ways to reduce the possibility of light pollution affecting birds. There's a lot of potential strategies there, including how you do lighting, when you turn your lighting off, what style of lighting, color, temperature, all that kind of thing that can help birds when they're moving at night.
And another one that I wanted to bring up, and I think I've discussed this on the show in the past, but getting the lead out of ammunition and tackle.
Yeah, that's a real big problem. There are some places, I think, I want to say Minnesota has been working on this. We're real big advocates for folks to use non-lead tackle and ammunition because lead is toxic. And we're seeing it get into the food systems and affect birds really negatively. We've had a lot of, if you talk to humane societies or wildlife centers, they have lead poisoning all the time, particularly of birds like bald eagle, who eat fish because the fish are the lead is getting consumed, and then it's bioaccumulating, and so we see these terrible cases of bald eagles who are suffering from lead poisoning. In most cases, many cases they die from it. Lots of water birds are affected by lead poisoning. So, you know, there's lots of good alternatives to lead out there that are really great. All my fishing gear now is non-lead.
Mine too. And I don't know, I feel kind of bad about thinking back to my young days when that's all we used. And
that's all I had too. Now we're
the other is good, just as good.
Just as good.
Just as good.
Yeah, and then you can feel pretty good about your fish fry.
So, John Watson, what's your most memorable sighting?
Oh my goodness! Boy. All right. So when I was a grad student at the University of Florida, I was doing an experiment, and I had there was a blue jay. I was watching a blue jay from a blind. And a red-shouldered hawk flew in. And the blue jay turned to the red-shouldered hawk and mimicked its call right to it. Did a red-shouldered hawk call to a red-shouldered hawk. I don't know why it did it, but it might have been like, hey, I'm one of you, don't eat me. I don't know, but it was fascinating. It was one of the coolest things I've seen.
Wow. That's one I haven't heard. I mean, I've heard about it. Birds, obviously mimicking others, but
yeah, they're
but blue jays do
blue jays,
it.
Yeah. And blue, by the way, fun fact about blue jays, their pigment is brown.
Yes,
they're not blue, they're the actual color, but that what's causing the blue coloring is the specialized cells in their feathers that refract blue light. So if you look at a blue jay feather not in the sun, it's gonna look brown, but the bird looks blue in the sun. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, do you work with other folks, other organizations in the neighborhood? I was thinking about Dexter Patterson.
Yeah, Dexter is a friend. We actually are the fiscal sponsor for the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin. So if folks want to make a donation to them, that'll come through us, and 100% of those funds will go to the club. But yeah, we partner with a lot of organizations. We always feel like that we're stronger together. So we like to work with other land trusts, other conservation organizations, non-conservation organizations. We really like partnering. So, it makes us all stronger.
And the Natural Resources Foundation that we just had on, they knew you very well.
Oh, yeah. We love working with the NRF. We love working with Groundswell and Gathering Waters and all sorts of other organizations. NRF, actually, one of the things that we do with them is they have a wonderful program called Diversity and Conservation, and it's an internship program that gets people who are underrepresented in conservation involved in conservation work. So we've hosted a Diversity and Conversation intern for the last 3 years now, and it's been a wonderful program. Okay. So,
and your website again, what's the website? People want to maybe get involved.
You can find us a lot of ways. The main address is swibirds.org.
swibirds.org. Simple enough.
Yep.
Matt, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That always goes so fast. Talking about birds with you, Larry. It's great.
Matt Reitz is Executive Director of Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance. Great to have him with us. And great to have you listening in today. And thank you so much for that. Our show is always a team effort. We've got Clara Kniper, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins all among the crew. Our executive director is Jill Nadeau. And, of course, I'm Larry Mueller. And I want to thank you so much for listening. And maybe I'll see you in Wausau tonight. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.